the winning sound of Network Sports.
And a very pleasant good evening to you, and welcome to another very special edition of Mason and Guest, heard on Voice of Barbados. You can call us at 434-1790. You can send a WhatsApp to 2534679 or an email to cricketmason@yahoo.com. Mason and Guest is brought to the association with the very good friends at ESFE Work Run, the best show of the day. All right, well, we begin the show with some sad news, the passing of Arthur Bethell. In fact, he was on this show a couple months ago paying tribute when Peter Lashley passed. In fact, I'm told he died this morning. In fact, I was talking to his son. He said he actually played golf yesterday, and it was a sudden death. And we, of course, here at Mason and Guess, may he rest in peace. And quite naturally, we have to do a reaction. So we found Robin Bino, who, of course, is a wanderer's man. Arthur was a Pickwick man, but, of course, they had some fierce battles. Good evening to you, Robin.
Hey there, Andrew.
I'm okay. Well, you've lost your good friend, Arthur Bethell.
Yeah,
your reaction?
My next-door neighbour.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. And you would have had a close friendship with him for quite a long time.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, way back, I used to captain Wanderers. I'm talking about the early 60s. And he used to captain Pickwick. And we used to have sort of fairly fierce rivalry. He was as you will remember, a slow left arm swing bowler. I used to open batting. I really wanted him for a six in the first over in the Kensington stand. But I never had the guts to do it, even to try it. But I really wanted to do it, but I never succeeded. But Arthur was a really solid cricketer, you know. He bowled well, he batted well. You may or may not remember, Andrew, that Arthur made about 150-odd against Australia in a Colts game. And you know, the Barbados side was so strong then that he couldn't get inside.
Extremely strong side. And you would have had a lot of battles. You actually would have captained you at one stage.
He captained me for one stage. Yes, he captained Barbados for a few games. I don't know where David Holford was, because David would have been wrong then, but he may have been touring or something.
Mm-hmm.
But Arthur did captain Barbados for you know, a couple of games very well.
Mm-hmm. I see.
He was a solid player. He really was a very solid player. A solid batsman, good bowler. But, you know, he was just, I don't know, Barbados had such a strong team in those days that he played for Barbados on many occasions. But, you know, if a fellow makes 157 in a game and he can't make the Barbados side, it just goes to show how strong the Barbados side was at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Mike King, of course, a noted journalist, he wants to offer tribute as well. Michael?
Andrew.
Yes. Your reaction to the death of Arthur Bethell.
The person on the line just sounds like a good friend of mine called Robin Bino.
Yes.
Hello, Mike. How are you doing?
Well, good to hear you, Robin. I was to call you half hour ago. I got caught up to doing editing. You know, I spent some time.
Well, anyway, Andrew beat you to it.
Well, yes, of course, yeah, but I spoke with his daughter, Bridget Bethell.
Yeah,
the family very down. Very down.
Yeah, obviously, man. It was a shock, because Arthur was really starting to feel a lot better. He started to play golf again,
mm-hmm.
and he was doing really well. This was a shock to the family, no doubt about it.
Mm. But of course, I know he's your next door neighbor. You're both living in
my next door neighbor. Yes, you're right.
Yes, local house in George.
Yeah,
but in fact, I spoke to Arthur Bethel only 3 weeks ago. In fact, as you remember, Robin, when he was doing my King of Staff at Harrison College, I spoke
right.
I lived with you. And when
Correct.
I did my King of Staff on Lodge School, I had some long conversations with Patrick Frost and Arthur Bethel. So
yeah.
I was shocked this morning when I got a WhatsApp from Wayne Daniel and another one from Leslie Reefer relaying
yeah.
information from Stephen Farmer. The Arthur Bethel had passed away. I was stunned. Unbelievable. But
believe
the Bethels,
me, it was a shock to all.
The Bethels have made a tremendous contribution to in fact, it's one of the biggest sporting families in this country. Arthur, a top man, a captain of the Barbarians in the 1969 Shell Shield.
That's correct.
And captain top players like Nurse. Lastly, Robin Biner would be part of that team. In
That's
fact,
sure.
I remember well, Robin Biner was the leading run scorer in the Shell Shield in 1969.
They must have had a very poor set of batsmen in those days.
Robin also was always very modest. But in terms of the Bethels, June was a hockey goalkeeper for Barbados.
That is true. June was a solid
goalkeeper.
Bridget
was a hockey goalkeeper for Barbados.
That's right.
His son, Graham, played
yes.
for Barbados. And, of course, his grandson, Jacob Bethel. We all know the story. Jacob, one of the most talented
doing well in Britain.
And now doing well in England. But I spoke to Bridget this evening. She's down. What I can tell you is that... She referred to her father as an amazing man, an amazing dad. He was very generous to her father. I can tell you about the Arthur Bethel. I didn't know, of course, not know me nearly as well as people like Robin Biner. But he came across as very sincere and genuine, a decent guy.
Right.
A good cricketer.
Solid cricketer.
He was part of that 1966 and 1967 Shell Shield squads. And then, of course, there was no Shell Shield in 68. And he took over in 69 when Sobers and the big guys would have been out. But he would have captained people like Robin Biner and Nurse and Larson and those people.
Correct,
in 69.
Correct. Mm-hmm. I was just telling mm-hmm. Andrew.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Arthur made 157, I think, against Australia in a Colts game.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't make the Barbados side to play against him.
Mm-hmm.
3 or 4 days later.
Can you imagine that?
Arthur was solid, but he obviously had to be a leader of men.
He was.
People like Tony Howard and those people, and Lashley and Bino in 1969.
Mm-hmm.
He had to be a leader of men, Arthur. We've got to give him credit for that.
Mm-hmm.
He was.
In fact, Arthur was good enough to make the Barbados team against the rest of the world side. We played the rest of the world here in March 1967. Arthur Bethel was part of that team that led, of course, the team was beaten by the rest of the world team. I think Mustaq Mohammed captain.
Yeah, had a good team, all right.
Yeah, it had a good team. But Arthur was part of that Barbados team that played against the rest of the world, but a strong rest of the world team that had the left of Mustaq Mohammed and that club.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Rohan Kelly and Lance played for that rest of the
Lance
world team.
Played for you, that's correct.
Yeah. And if I can remember, too, Barbados being bowled up for 84. And Sober stops going 32.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
It's true. We didn't do so good in the first innings. That's the truth.
No.
Yeah, we didn't do very well at all. But it was a very, very good side. Mustaq Mohammed had a tremendous game, had half centuries in both innings, and got some wickets too.
Mm-hmm.
But Arthur was a key man, will be badly missed. A St. John man, I want to make that clear, Andrew.
Right.
He's a St. John man, but of course, he spent his later years in Locust Hall, St. George. Living next to Robin Biner.
Right.
So two men that live in St. George, but are not St. George men. Robin Biner is not a St. George man.
Mm-hmm.
Christchurch.
Yes, Christchurch man.
Christchurch man who lives in local Salt Terrace.
Right. Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you. Robin, just one final thing. Are you still very much involved in the cricket? Do you listen? Do you watch?
I listen, Andrew, but I listen. I mean, I enjoy the cricket we just had, you know, with the 20, with the series.
Mm.
And the game with Australia, India was first class game, really.
Right.
And, you know, Australia won comfortably in the end, but, you know, had if they lost another wicket there quickly, mm-hmm. anything could have happened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, yes, I follow it, but, you know, Andrew, there's so much cricket on now.
Right.
You know, white ball, all sorts of different colour balls and things. It's difficult to keep up with it as so much.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Anyway, we got a series coming up here now.
Again.
With England, right.
Yes, starting very soon, December the 3rd. The first game is going to be in Antigua. Well, Robin, I want to thank you for coming through and talking to us.
Andrew.
Mm-hmm. My pleasure, Andrew.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Robin.
Thank you.
Andrew.
Yeah, Michael.
Yeah, before I run off, I just wanted to put in a plug for Ricky Elcock. He's got his big book out. It's called Balls to Fly, and I think it's to be released here on Independence Day.
I think we may very well have him online as well. So
you need to Ricky Elcock, the former Barbados youth cricketer, and the name of the book, I think people are asking me, it's called Balls to Fly, and it tells of the experiences of Ricky Elcock.
Right.
Who's come a very, very long way in cricket. Mm-hmm. Our first graduate to become an airline pilot.
Right.
Pilot.
Right. Okay, Michael, thanks very much for coming and talking to us. And enjoy the rest of your evening. All right. Well, we certainly had to do a tribute for Bethel passing this morning. In fact, I just got a note from earlier on today. His son said he went out playing golf only yesterday. And died this morning. May he rest in peace. All right. Now, gentlemen, lots to talk about already. We're going to take a commercial break when we come back. We obviously have so many things to discuss. The West Indies team. No Darren Bravo on the side. The Australia victory over India. So many things to discuss. We're going to get some reaction. But Mason and Guest, brought to an association with our very good friends at ASFE White Rum, the best shot of the day.
ASFE White Rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right, now, where do we start? Do we start with the Australia victory? Do we start with the West Indies team? No, Darren Bravo. Let's start with the Australia victory. Get a reaction from Ricardo Elcock, who actually, on this show, about two or three weeks ago, said that he had Australia to win. And he's now in England, and of course, resting comfortably. Hello, Ricardo, you were spot on. And you were there watching the action, India versus Australia. Where did India go wrong, in your view, Ricardo? You're muted.
You're muted, top right-hand corner.
Right, okay.
I think it's probably just a little bit too big of an occasion for India on the day, you know, 130,000 people, the Indian Air Force, whole of India wanted them to win. I think the burden was just a little bit too far for them. But, you know, having said that, Australia does the right things when they play cricket. You know, they play it hard, they train the right way, they pick the right team. I think there's no coincidence that they were four teams that got to the semifinals there, and all basically the four semifinal teams had their test bowling attacked and test batting attacked, and that's no coincidence that those things actually made it. And Australia had a proper bowling attack; they were always going to be to give any team they played problems, and you weren't going to beat Australia twice. I'll tell you that. So that was my reckoning up front.
Mm-hmm. Tony Gray, your reaction to the Australia win? Tony, where are you?
Yes, good evening. Good evening to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Your reaction
you
to
hear
the Australia,
me, Andrew?
We're hearing you loud and clear. Your reaction to the win?
Yeah, I think it was a brilliant win. I agree with Ricardo Elcock when he says that the pressure was too immense for the Indian players. I mean, if you look at the pressure that they have in comparison to any other players in world cricket, they have huge amounts of pressure, not only because they're the most populated country in the world, but they have the most fan base in the world. And we know that in India, cricket is the fanatic things with people. Now, the thing with the India, I said it in the last program last week, that they didn't have the benefit of losing a game. When you have the benefit of losing a game, you reassess things. The feeling of invincibility is not there because you've lost a game. Mm-hmm. What has happened is that they won, 10 straight games going into the final. And I had said in a group chat that the pitch that they set was for Australia to not do well, to negate Australia's strength, which is obviously the fast bowling department. They have Zampa, who is a good spinner. And the Australians would have liked the ball coming onto the bat. But that went against the Indians, and the ball seemed wrong in the early parts of the game. And subsequently, they got into a precarious position where they couldn't come out of. I agree with Alcock too. 130,000 people, right? The Indian diaspora, the pressure on them. And it looked like Rohit Sharma was really numb. He didn't have the ability to be tactically creative because of fear, and he couldn't respond in that pressure situation. And that's what I mean last week when I said you've got to get a loose under your belt so that you could reorganize yourself and understand how to deal with pressure. They didn't deal with the pressure properly at all. And Australia, on the other hand, obviously they have that inherent quality of being internally strong. They know how to win World Cups, and they have pride in their performance. And obviously Maxwell's innings of a double century permeated into the final. And you saw, a wonderful inning by Travis Head. So all in all, the Australians deserve to win, but the Indians didn't play the A game on that particular final.
Mm-hmm. George Ferris, your reaction to the Australia win?
Hey, good evening, everyone. Well, Andrew, you can look back on my note from October 24th, what I told you, that India would not win the World Cup. Ooh. Because of the immense pressure that they're facing. Also, they have been chokers for the last 9 years. In 2014, they got to the final. 2015, the semifinal. 2016, semifinals. 2017, a final. 2019, final. Now, 2023, the finals. They're chokers over the last 9 years or so in all these competitions. The pressure was on them. Mm. They were playing in front of 130,000 people. And they, once the crowd went silent, I could see the tension in their faces. The captain was a bit greedy when he was batting. I think he underestimated Maxwell and played a silly shot, got out. Then he got out, and then Kohli got out. The guys started to panic, you know. So congratulations to the Australians. They always play tough cricket. Anytime you face the Aussies, you be prepared for a great fight. So I am happy for the Australians. I wasn't gunning for India at all.
Mm. Basil, I didn't know that they were chokers. I thought that was South Africa.
I don't know if I would use the word chokers, but what I would say is that the game, India never felt pressure. There's a little bit in the game where they had to bowl out the team when they made just 230 something, right? But beyond that, they as a batting unit and so on, they never felt the pressure. And that partnership after they lost those three wickets, with Kohli and Rahul, there was no intent. It was almost like they said, look, we're gonna poke around, get these singles and so on, and hope to blast at the bottom. And it played into Australia's hands because it allowed Cummins to bowl a lot of part-timers, and these guys were only going for two and three and four. And instead, if the pressure was being built on India as a result, and they cracked. Australia came out and took it to them. And despite the fact that Australia lost those early wickets, the run rate was well in hand, that it just took guys to knock it around to win the match. But again, the match was still in the balance, as Mr. Bino said, because had Australia lost a wicket with that big partnership between Travis Head and Labuschagne, if either one of them had gotten out, we might have had a really exciting finish. But credit to them, Travis Head played his natural game, was positive throughout, and Labuschagne was playing just like a test match, and they got three paces here. So as a bowler, when you saw Labuschagne, even his defensive shots was coming off the middle of the bat, you as a bowler gotta be like, Lord of mercy, I in for a long day.
Dr. Ford, were you surprised by the win, Dr. Ford?
Good night to the panelists and the listeners. I have to say it was a fantastic World Cup, the best I've ever watched. Hindsight is 2020. India got the wicket or the pitch that they wanted. They had the crowd support, but from the first over, when you saw the intensity and that safe boundary in the offside, you knew that Australia came to play, and you know, they really squeezed India. At 8 and over, the first 10, at 4 and over for the rest of the 40. They never really got going. I believe they had a good batting lineup, 7 batsmen. They capably made big runs the whole tournament, but Australia bowled well, and I think we have to give credit to them. They assessed the pitch and executed extremely well. India panicked because they lost the match from making such a low score. They knew they needed wickets, and once they didn't let Siraj get the new ball, and they panicked and they pushed Shami earlier. It worked out, but after they got stalled at the three wickets, I think, Andrew, what we saw is something that I think is useful to you, that a captain looks good when things are going well, but when things are going badly, every captain looks bad. And I think that, you know, the Indian captain, I think Mr. Trick, I think Kuldeep, I think he had to switch to test match conditions and put in a slip and a short leg and let Kuldeep bowl at the pace for a test match and try to really get wickets. He would only have won with wickets. And once he went with the attack that he had and spread the field, it was just for Australia to play the test match and to win the World Cup. So in the long run, I think assessing the conditions and playing the conditions made a lot of sense. And I think that it shows that 50 over cricket is about playing the conditions and the situation more than trying to make a certain score. And, you know, it also shows that skill, talent, and, you know, intellect and playing the conditions are much more important in this format of the game. That's what made it fascinating, because we oscillated between T20 execution and test match execution. So I think even though 50 overs is thought to be a format that's dying, I think it's a wonderful blend of all of the shortest and the longest format, and I hope that people will appreciate it and it will live on.
Right, interesting. I know that Fellow Wallace is having one or two challenges. He's been on and off all the time. I don't know where he is.
Having auditory, he's having some sound issues, really.
Okay.
He doesn't seem to be hearing.
No. Okay. Let me come back to you now, Mr. Elcock. Why is Australia so good? Why are they so good?
Because Australia has a formula of playing cricket, and it doesn't vary that much. You know, you check Australia team. I could tell you what Australia team is going to be in 2028. I'm telling you. They don't change it terribly much. I can't tell you who the individual players are going to be. But I'm going to tell you, Australia are going to play three seam bowlers, quick bowlers, and usually high-end quick bowlers. They're going to play an all-rounder who's also a quick bowler, and they're going to play a spinner. The rest are batsmen, and they're going to have a batting wicket keeper. That's what Australia's played since the 1940s. Mm-hmm. They've never changed it. It's worked for them, and they will continue to play. And maybe other teams should look at Australia's formula and actually worked on that. In 50-over cricket, a lot of teams have decided to play bits and pieces players. And it's very easy in a T20 game if you have to fill in with 4 overs. You try doing it with 10 overs in a 50-over game if you don't have proper a bowling attack, as Australia had. If you don't have a proper bowling attack, trying to fill in 10 overs It's virtually impossible. But Australia always play a proper test match side in a 50-over game. There's no bits and pieces players.
No.
They've got proper bowling and they've got proper batting. And that's exactly what they've done, for, as I say, for 60 years. Mm-hmm. And it's worked for them.
Mm-hmm. You agree with that, George Ferris?
Yes, indeed, Andrew. My good mate, Ricky Alcock, is right on point. Australia employed a strategy that no one else did. What? And I was looking for that all the time. Bowling short to the Indian batsman. Mm. Everybody was giving the Indian batsman a lot of room to play that flaring shot outside the off stump. Nobody's attacking the wickets much. Nobody's pushing them back. You know, you see some of the Australian batsmen charging the fast bowlers, but the fast bowlers don't do anything in response. They're going back into their sweet zones for them to hit. The Australians were pushing them back because if you notice with the Australian batters, only one guy who would consistently take on the short ball, and that would be the captain, Rohit Sharma. Mm. But he himself is not a good hooker. He hooks up. Any batter who hooks up constantly, they're not in control of the ball. So I thought that Australia did a great thing bowling the ball short of a good length, pushing the Indian batsmen on their back foot, and they were not comfortable. Kohli is a great player, but he still has not conquered the short ball.
Mm.
And if you notice, the short ball is what got him out, played back onto his stump.
Mm.
But in the past, against Australia, he has not fared too well against the short ball. Mm. And the pitches were slow, and the Australians were still able to restrict them. Australia is a tough team. These guys are good tacticians. They strategize well. They field hard. They support each other. And that's why they're so successful. They're strong too.
Yes, I agree with Dr. Ford in relation to the tactics of India. I mean, they got a couple of early wickets, and I just didn't understand the field placings. I mean, where the Australians were able to get easy singles, you know, I mean, you had long off.
Can I ask you a question, Andrew?
Yep.
Just a quick question.
Sure.
Can you imagine if the West Indies were 33-3 and you've got Powell, Russell, you know, Shepherd coming to bat? Can you imagine that?
Mm.
You're going to get ball up for 150, aren't you?
Yeah. Different situation.
Australia's got proper batting.
Different team.
Still coming.
But I wanted to make a comment on your formula because, you know, this was a case where Australia really only had four bowlers because their all-rounders weren't there. Green and Stoinis, they really went with Mitchell Marsh, who didn't do very much, and Max Bull, and headed a long run. So they were able to cobble together that last 10 overs, but you know, they had India under so much pressure that it worked out. And, you know, but I'm sure that Green was the man they really expected to play the whole World Cup, and he didn't make it. And even Carey was a guy that they would have expected to play the whole World Cup and didn't make it. So it showed that even during the World Cup tournament, they were able to make hard decisions and to drop people that seem to be cemented in place in the team. So it's a team that's very resilient. They make the decisions that, you know, at the tournament, and they are on the, it depends on who's performing.
Mm. Anthony, let's talk about the captaincy of Pat Cummins. I thought he was brilliant.
Yeah, definitely. So I think that coming from the Ashes series, there were a lot of question marks about his captaincy in the early parts of that series. And I didn't like the approach of the Australians, obviously. But in this tournament, again, when you have senior players around you, it's not just about Pat Cummins. He has that ability to, you know, have that experience to impart the tactical part of the game in the right situations of the game. But remember, as mentioned, these guys have played test match cricket.
Mm-hmm.
Test match cricket encompasses all the other games, all the other formats of the game. So they would have been in different situations. Remember, they lost the first two games.
Right.
But Pat Cummins, obviously, is a very intelligent man. He's a leader of men, too, because he seemed to have the power of influence over his players. But in addition to that, he has senior players around, and they work as a team. You talk about Australian cricket, for example. That is inherent in their system. They have a legacy to protect. And the fact is that they have a really good cricket system. So Pat Cummins have been a part of that system since he was 18 years old as a fast bowler alone. And he has really grown into his captaincy. But again, you have to understand captaincy is not going to be strong without the support of the other players, the other senior players, and we've seen it a lot. Just one question on what Elcock said. It makes a lot of sense that we constantly pick bits and pieces cricketers in the one-day format, but our history will show unequivocally that when we pick batsmen who can make runs and bowlers who can take wickets, we were very good in the one-day game, and we played our test match cricketers in one-day cricket too, just to magnify his point.
Okay, let's pause for business calls. When we come back, we continue discussions. We're also going to get some reaction from around the region. Don't forget the West Indies side has, in fact, been selected. That's the team to play against England. No Darren Bravo. That certainly has created a big stir. I note with interest his brother came out and not happy at all about the non-selection of the man who did so well in the regional Super 50. Mason and Guest, brought in association with the very good friends at ESFE, White Rum, the best shot of the day.
ESFE, White Rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
Yeah, Basil, you agree that Pat Cummins was brilliant as a captain? You agree?
I made a comment that that final was the best I've ever seen Pat Cummins tactically as a captain. Tony said earlier, you know, there were a lot of question marks in the Ashes series about his captaincy, where he's right on. But then on the other hand, if your bowlers are executing the way they were executing, it makes captaincy very, very easy. You know what I mean? They executed to their plans to a T. I mean, look at Stark, for example. Stark is a guy that likes to pitch it way up, looking for swing. But they figured out early, look, back of the length is what's going to work here today. We didn't see Stark going up. So as a result, Stark's a guy that usually go for a lot of runs. He didn't. And he had the Indian batters on edge because of the lengths he was bowling and with his pace, even though, you know, is a slow wicket, but 90 is still 90 miles an hour, regardless of slow wicket or not. It's still 90.
Yeah. Ricardo, you were there. Tell us about the atmosphere.
Absolutely amazing, Andrew. I mean, as a pilot myself, I mean, I walked into the stadium to be greeted by the Indian Air Force at low level, flying formation over the 130,000 people. Absolutely stunning occasion. The color, food, noise. I mean, I think it was too much for me, far less an Indian side that was expected to win. And the whole of India, Ahmedabad, we traveled up from Mumbai, for instance, up to on the train to Ahmedabad. And that was full of Indian supporters going up to the game. You got to Ahmedabad. And this is a city that's a dry city, Andrew. There's no alcohol allowed in Ahmedabad. And
that would have disappointed you. That disappointed you, I would imagine.
It disappointed a lot of people. But this intoxicating atmosphere, it was almost as everybody was on alcohol. It was just an amazing atmosphere of color and noise and just a big occasion, you know. Just imagine, half of the population of Barbados was in that stadium.
I see.
What amazing.
So when did you get back to England?
I arrived back in England this morning.
Oh, okay. I see.
Around 7 morning.
I see.
So I had a quick sleep, and I come on to speak to you, Andrew.
Okay, wonderful. We really appreciate that. And your book is coming out soon. And Mike King mentioned it earlier. When is your book coming out?
It's been released on Amazon 30th of November.
Okay.
We're hoping to launch it in Barbados in early December. So it'd be there for everyone to have a good perusal.
Tell us about the contents. I'm very keen to hear.
Well, it's a young boy from a poor background who's risen to, you know, a rag to riches story, to tell the truth. And riches, when I say riches, I'm not talking about money. I'm talking about being able, you know, to take my mom to South Africa, for instance, you know, things like that, you know, a situation that she would never have ever imagined doing. You know, it's just a story of hard work, and producing results down the road.
Mm-hmm. And your choice to be a pilot, tell me, how did that come about?
I probably wanted to be a, well, no, I wanted to be a pilot before I wanted to play cricket.
Really?
The first year playing, I sat on 10 years out of Commonwealth. You could remember the American Air Force flying aircraft around Barbados in the late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, I would have been about 12 or something like that. And I went aboard one of the aircraft carriers. The guy asked me if I wanted to sit in the aircraft. I sat in the thing and thought, you know what, I'd like to be able to do this. And went home, told my dad, and he said to me, black people don't fly airplanes. Think about law or medicine or something like that. And of course, the type of child that I was at the time, you know, that was, you know, a rag to a bull. As soon as he said that, I thought, well, you know what, I'm going to prove you wrong. And so even though I was playing cricket in England during the 80s and stuff like that, I went off and got a private license and that. And from then onwards, as soon as I had the injury, then it was my opportunity to go and do it professionally.
Just before Dr. Ford, I'm sure he's got a question for you or some other members of the panel. As a pilot, when do you retire? You go past, you don't go past a particular age, I would imagine.
65.
Can you imagine Ricardo flying a plane at 64? Yes, Doc, talk to me. Any questions for any of the panelists?
Well, I would have seen Ricardo at Colomer up and on, but you know, I wasn't aware that at Colomer academically you were interested in the subjects that pilots would be interested in, you know, math and, I don't know, physics and geography or whatever the things are. So the thing is, you know, what I know you were inspired by being in the cockpit, but was that something, the genesis of that was here, or it was when you left?
No, that happened, as a matter of fact, at Colmere, though. And, I mean, you would have, obviously, you saw me at Colmere as a boy running up and bowling a cricket ball in the nets and stuff like that. But actually, that interest actually started at Colmere School.
Okay. Well, the next question really is for George and Tony. When India started to bowl, we were getting, I guess, for all three of you, the ball was swinging hoops, and the first few overs, the openers played a miss so many times. It looked like Australia was a bit flustered and they were playing the wrong brand of cricket for the conditions, and it looked like they could have collapsed at any time. What do you think? Do you think that India may have tried to get too much swing or tried too hard early on? I guess Tony can take a shot at that, and then George, and then my former Colmerian.
Well, you have to understand something. During the course of a game, players sort of develop on what transpired in the early parts of the game. Obviously, the Australians got the ball to move around. The pitch was very difficult to bat because of that movement. There was fluctuation and bumps and perhaps pace because, as mentioned on this program, they tried a lot of the short deliveries, but they were not fast, short deliveries. They were taking the pace of the ball, and it was very difficult. What happens in that sort of situation with that very small score, the Indian bowlers would have looked to be very aggressive, but not build pressure. And what happened tactically, I think that Rohit Sharma was poor. He should have allowed the seamers to continue when there was some remnants of movement from the early parts of the game, but he didn't, and he wasn't creative at all. So the movement got less and less, and it was easier for the batsmen to play. But remember, you have to have support from the other end when your team is in a precarious position, losing three wickets. But Travis Head batted well, but Labuschagne was absolutely situational in that he took his time. He was playing a test match innings because there was no scoreboard pressure. So the Indian bowlers were ultra aggressive in the attack because they got three wickets, but then they struggled when the ball didn't move about and there was no real fluctuation and bounce. It got easier and easier for batting. So as I mentioned in the group chat, the pitch backfired on them. And again, you have to do real deep research and understand that a lot of the Australian batsmen are playing in the IPL, so they're very adept at playing spin and playing with the slow nature of the pitch. So that they faltered where that is concerned. But very good effort by Australia, I might add. And the Indian bowlers had to go and take wickets, but they didn't.
All right, gentlemen, you know, we say we're going to try and get some reaction from across the Caribbean. And I know he's a very, very busy man, former West Indies wicketkeeper, Derek Murray, joins us. He's in Jamaica. Hello, Derek. How are you?
Andrew.
Good.
Hello to all your panel, your listeners, viewers. Mm-hmm. Nice to be able to join you.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Your reaction to the Australia win? Were you surprised that they won the World Cup?
Not necessarily. I think once you get to the final of a World Cup, either team can win. I think throughout the tournament, India swept aside their opponent. And unfortunately for them, at the final hurdle, they fell to a team that played extremely well and a team that put pressure on themselves by having a bad start to the tournament, but using that pressure to come out of different situations, the game against Afghanistan, you know, and different people contributed throughout the tournament. And so, no, I mean, the kind of fighters that Australia, you could never be surprised when they win. I have to confess that being a neutral observer throughout the tournament, I actually was hoping, wanted one of a new team to really win, not one of what you call nowadays the big three who dominate cricket. So it was really, you know, looking at the point of view where Australia came through when it mattered.
And Pat Cummins was brilliant in terms of his execution of his bowlers. He's gotten a lot of credit across the world for his captaincy.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously the Australian team was really well prepared. And And it was a lesson, I think, to younger players, budding players, really. So I'm looking now at the teenagers. And they look at this team, and if they really analyze it properly, they will see that periods of the game were played as a test match. Periods of the game were played as a T20 game.
Yes.
And periods of the game were played as a 50-over game with the different variations and so, and it was really a sterling performance.
Yeah, very much indeed. There's no doubt about that. Australia is a very difficult side, and you would have had some battles. In fact, you would have been part of that final back in 1975. Australia, very, very difficult. Very, very difficult indeed.
Always. They fight right to the end. But yes, and they will continue to do so. But as I say, I would really have hoped that, you know, the big three dominates cricket at the moment on and off the field. And it would really have been nice for one or two of the others to come through and play in the final. But again, having said that, you know, you look at the way the whole tournament proceeded, and it was good to see, you know, teams like even Netherlands and Afghanistan winning games and playing extremely good cricket. So, you know, that cricket is alive and well. So, you know, the West Indies need to to sort of take stock and see how we can get back into that kind of fray and be in those sorts of tournaments.
How do you feel, though, as a former West Indies cricketer? You were very much a part of that a tremendous victory, that West Indies are not involved.
Well, I think, you know, you get to come to terms with it. It was a few months ago that the final nails were driven into our 2023 campaign where we didn't qualify. Mm-hmm. So we are trying to adjust to the fact that we're not in the tournament. But I think people need to wake up and see, listen, not because West Indies were not in the tournament, it wasn't a tournament. So we need to look and see what the Netherlands, what Afghanistan, what Bangladesh are doing. And then right on the heels, you have Ireland, Scotland, Zimbabwe. So it's no automatic thing that the West Indies are going to qualify for the next one. So we need to be sure of where we are going with our cricket.
Yes. Are you involved at any level, the Cricket West Indies, Derek?
No, only in terms of having a deep and unpalatable say in what I think should happen, and I will say whenever people ask me, but as much as what we need on the field, we need to see happening off the field if West Indies cricket is going to come back into the fray and realize our potential. Because there is no game saying that there is not the potential throughout the island. But, you know, you're not seeing it being harnessed properly. You're not seeing being nurtured and developed from the early stages of primary school upwards. And, you know, we need to put that right before we start going around saying we have some of the most sought-after players in the world, et cetera, et cetera. That's nice to say and nice for the players to hear. But the reality is that cricket is moving on with or without them.
Yes. Just before you go, your reaction to the squad that was picked, Darren Bravo, he did so very well in the Super 50 competition. Hope, Joseph, Atanase, Kara, Carty, Chase, Durridge, Ford, Hetmar, King, Moti, Otley, Rutherford, Shepherd, and Thomas. Were you surprised that Darren Bravo didn't make the side?
Well, I'm surprised at a lot of what is happening. And yes, if the last tournament is any guide to who is doing well should be selected, then yes, a couple of players come to mind. Bravo is one. But, you know, you're really, and I think more than just the team itself, Andrew, you look at some of the statements that have come, particularly from the selectors. And it's all conflicting.
Yes.
You know, what does it mean, for instance, that Pooran and Holder are prioritizing their development in some other form of cricket, so that's why they weren't selected? You know, why somebody wasn't selected? Was it because he was 34 years of age? But you look in the team and you see some 33 and 32. So I don't know what the policy is, where are we going? And even worse, you don't know who is answerable to who. Who selects the selectors? Who selects the different coaching staffs, etc.? And you just see almost a mix-up of where are we going, how are we going. So we see our director, former director of cricket, is now an assistant coach somewhere. You know, and what is the West Indies policy? Cricket, and B, to who is answerable for the development of our cricket? Who is doing what? And I'm not seeing any moves to say that we are becoming structured in our thinking, and it's just a question of going back for the last 30 or 40 years and just muddling along and, you know, not... And we are where we are because of that.
Yeah. Basil, any questions for your good friend Derek Murray before he goes, or anybody want to react? He's certainly very concerned. Any questions for the great man?
Good evening, Mr. Murray. It's been a while. I would like to ask you the question in terms of the lack of focus that still seems to be, because criticizing Cricket West Indies is always low-hanging fruit. And the seemingly lack of focus on focusing on what is going on in the territories, which is where that is our production line of our players. And that has been, it seems to be in tatters. And we don't hear enough talk about that.
No, I think there should be focus on that, because it is the territorial board that should have the first input into any player's development. And you are absolutely right. So who do the territorial board answer to? So in a sense, it is whether you put the cart before the horse or not. So you have a West Indies board, which is supposed to be the overriding umbrella body, but can they dictate to the territorial board? I think they should. But in fact, you will hear arguments that the territorial boards are the owners of West Indies cricket, which I dispute. But so they tell the West Indies board what to do. So I'm really saying that the structure, the way it's structured, the way it's playing out over the last 30, 40 years, is to the detriment of West Indies cricket. So, yep, they're all in the same boat. And yes, that's where our problems begin. I would say even at a primary school level. But, you know, again, who determines where the emphasis is? Because right now, if you just look at it in terms of quantity, there is a lot of cricket being played in the West Indies or by the West Indies. All sorts of teams, emerging teams, playing against Ireland, a team playing somewhere. You know, everything is going on. We have an England tour coming up next. It's plenty, plenty cricket at that level. And what is the development going in? What are we just churning out players and giving everybody a game in some different tournament? Or is there a policy? How are we developing the talent that we see all around us when you look at the cricket at primary school level, women's cricket? Everybody can play. But what do we do to develop them rather than just churn out older players doing the same thing that they have done forever? And again, to me, that's where our problems lie, and we need to sort that out before we actually going to start seeing any sustainable advancement of West Indies cricket from where we are today.
Okay, final question. I'm a little surprised that you're not a part of any committees at all, because I know when Ricky Skerritt was president, you were very much involved at some level. So no committees in relation to our good friend Dr. Shallow? Not a committee? You're on?
No, not the last committee I was on the Webby committee, which produced the Webby report, which was another one of those very in-depth report, along with the Barito report, along with the Patterson report, that are reporting somewhere and no action taken on any of those. And there are many other reports that have very meaningful suggestions and recommendations, which more than adequate to start engaging the West Indies board so that they can make meaningful decisions. But then they keep being shelved. So, but it has to surface sometime. We just cannot go on like
not at all.
And expect to survive. Mm.
Any interest, Derek, in coming back to Trinidad and be part of management? Maybe the president of the board again? Or you're finished with that?
Well, I'm in a position representing the Trinidad and Tobago government in Jamaica, and that is my position at the moment. I will always have an interest in cricket and will always have opinions and would advocate for certain things to happen. But the rest of it, you know, we need to find the right people mm-hmm. to do things. And I think there needs to be some kind of interim committee that kind of has the credibility and the wherewithal to be able to channel the vast experience and expertise that we have around the Caribbean and bring them to bear to make meaningful input into West Indies cricket.
So you don't talk to Dr. Shallow at all?
I have not spoken with him for a while, not for any specific reason. I think it just hasn't come up.
Oh.
And I know, you know, he has his hands full with a lot of other things going on. We have preparations for the 2024 T20 World Cup, which is very, very important because I hope it achieves a lot more for the West Indies than the 2007 World Cup did. So, you know, there are lots of things to be done. But it's not a one-man show. This is not Dr. Shallow's West Indies cricket. He is the steward for the board affairs at the moment, and he has a tremendous responsibility with what I consider to be a fairly dysfunctional body.
Oh, all right. Thanks very much indeed. Strong words at the end there. Thanks to you, Derek Murray. Enjoy the rest of your evening, and we hope to speak to you again soon. Thanks very much for coming on Mason and Guest.
And have a very productive show as usual.
Oh, thank you. 4341790, the lines are open. You can certainly react to the Australia win, or we can, of course, turn our attention to the West Indies side. That has certainly brought a great deal of controversy. 4341790 is our call number. Now, let's go back to you, George, first. If you can just change and look at the West Indies squad that has been selected to play against England. Are you surprised?
Well, the only two surprises that I see were Hetmyer and Otley. I never thought Hetmyer did enough to merit his place in the squad. And also, Otley hasn't done anything. I never really remembered him. Mm. Regarding Darren Bravo, I did not like the explanation given by Mr. Haynes. I don't know if he was caught off guard with that question, because if you're going to talk about age, there are a few guys who are within the same age range as age group as Darren Bravo. To me, if he had used a different excuse to come out of that, I would have said, if it was me, the explanation that I would have given is said, well, you know, Darren Bravo did very well on the slow pitches. However, we're going to face England with some very quick bowlers, and he has not really conquered or mastered the short pitch bowling, and we're concerned about him and his safety. Something like that. That's what I would have said. Well, he shouldn't have used that type of explanation. But the squad looks good with the type of players that we have. I like Hayden Walsh Jr. because he's going to save us 20, 30 runs in the field. And he has improved a lot in his bowling, and he's batting well too. Correa is not too bad, but if I had my say, I would have picked Hayden Walsh Jr. instead of Yannick Correa.
And all in all,
the team looks okay.
And you would have picked Darren Bravo?
I would have picked Darren Bravo if I was a selector, because he merited this place, made the most runs. And also, last year, he did well as well. So it's tough that when you make all that runs, you did your best, and then you're not in the side Wait, you can't sleep at night with stuff like that. Because you're in your bed wondering, hey, what's going on here? I've done my best. I scored more runs than anybody, average higher than everybody else, and I can't get into the squad. Are they trying to tell me to retire? All these things would be messing with his head.
So
it's a bit unfair. It's a tough decision. Tough.
All right. Okay. A lot of calls backed up. Let's take a couple of them. We're going to get a reaction from Tony Greer very soon. I also want to ask Ricardo what he thinks of the England side and how they'll compete. But let's take a call. We can. Hello. Welcome, Mr. Ngesse.
Let me see if I get through tonight, because I seriously want to know if they're in the business.
Or hello?
Hello. Good night.
Yeah, you're live on Mr. Ngesse.
Listen to me, please. I want to know, seriously, is West Indies in the business of recycling players? Under no circumstance bring back Darren Bravo.
You wouldn't bring back Darren Bravo. No.
No, Bravo is a Creole word for well done. Mm. But not Darren Bravo.
Oh,
you know. Roberts, Desmond Haynes, Malcolm got dropped, played 12th mile when it was in the peak of the game. Then we bring some fella from Guyana, I think, Clayton Lambert. Play some cricket at Wanderers, come past 50, but still we pick here the West Indies team. Let me tell you something, it's fundamentally wrong with the West Indies team.
Mm.
I make no bones about it.
Mm-hmm.
They ain't recycling.
No, so you're not picking Darren Bravo at all?
I ain't picking nobody, I'm recycling. He's not in the prime of his game. When he was the show, he was no Dwayne Bravo. When Bravo played in the game in St. Lucia, when you heard the people saying Bravo, not only was they calling his name, Bravo is a Creole word for well done. Have a good night.
Thank you. Let's take a couple of calls. Head into 17 minutes past. Hello, welcome.
Hello, good evening, Mr. Mason. How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Not too bad. Let me say, I want to comment on the cricket.
Sure.
That I don't know if y'all guys were seeing what I was seeing, but I saw a group of the thickest cricketers in the world on display in this World Cup.
Fittest cricketers in the world.
The thickest cricketers in the world. And I believe that fitness is 60% of cricket. I don't know if you were watching what I was watching, but I saw balls being hit. Bang! And the field over regards to what position he's in, the ball is the next time he is bang! The ball back instead of the wicketkeeper glove. From whatever position they are at,
yes,
the ball is back instead of the wicketkeeper glove.
Brilliant.
And I saw, and this is what happened to West Indies bat with the riches, you know. You had one of the thickest teams in world cricket because fellas, they had the BMWs to drive out and whatnot. You understand? And then Mr. Rafe, Dennis Rafe, got involved and pushed them further on. And the Australians realized what was happening. And they got on board. And the Indians realized what was happening.
Fitness is key.
Most all of the teams in the world got on board, except West Indies.
Yeah.
I don't see West Indies' fitness nowhere close
to the team. Not at all. Not at all. Not at all. I mean, look at Hetmyer. Look at Hetmyer.
You
my golly. Look at Hetmyer.
You're not somebody paying you thousands of dollars to travel all over the world, and you're getting a decent start, has to eat, everything at your hands, and people make noise. And I remember one of the captains in the West Indies tell them, so if they're working with people, it's too hard.
Yes, yes.
To be fit.
Yeah, thanks for your contribution. We gotta move on. There's several people backed up, but thanks for your contribution. Fitness is key. Hello, welcome, Mason and Guest, 719 in the country.
Yes, good evening, Andrew.
Hey, Randolph.
And to your guests, I did indicate to you last week that Darren Bravo should not make the team. And I am quite in sync with the Honorable Desmond Haynes, giving him his title for not playing him. Last time, if my memory serves me well, against England, Darren Bravo struggled to get the ball off the square playing against England when the last time he played against England. And I take his point that with the youngsters, they invest in money in youngsters, play the youngsters. If they get beat with the youngsters, thing, and you're looking at 2027, Bravo would be about 38. Now, you know, so these couple of runs, the people boiling a lot of crap. He get back the most runs. He just stayed with it. I'm shocked to see his brother. Yes, your brother should come and defend you, but I can understand. I'm shocked when I hear comments coming from him. Not going to use that now. Congratulations to Australia. I think that they did a wonderful thing. I must say that they muzzle the Indian and the spectators. I realize that you don't have your top boy with you there tonight.
No, he's having some challenges. I don't know what's going on there.
He's having challenges. He would get, you know why he would have the challenges tonight?
Why?
Because he said
India will win.
130 odd blue shirts.
Yes.
Some blue shirts.
Mm.
And Australia would be in trouble because they would be playing things. But the Australians have shake that blue shirts off and produce a good spell, good captaincy, good bowling, and everything. As long as you get Kohli out early, and I call it early this point that he get 50. They allow him to run, and I think the runs there were manageable, although Australia made a couple of boo-boos down the line, but congratulations to them. And let me say this, Andrew, I know just like me, you're a Man U person, but I recognize that these sportscasters in this country do not like India, England, and Australia, nor Lakers.
Why
whenever
is that?
Lakers, I know I don't want to change up your program. Whenever Lakers win, they bring the wins down to the bottom, unless two teams play.
Mm.
And when Australia win, they talk about the final kind of things they talk about before they talk to the Australian win and England. Mm-hmm. But what we need to do, stop being against these people that we're going to do sports and make sure that we get our team, my team, in sync with what is going on. And we could only go from strength to strength if we bring the youngsters, give the youngsters a chance. You must give them a chance and don't rely on these other people. So I wish my team good luck against England, but I'm sure that they should play well. If they don't play well, they'll be beaten.
Right.
But they should play well.
All right, thanks, Randolph. Let's take another call before we get a reaction from the panel. Hello, welcome, Mason and Guest.
Hello, good night, Mr. Mason.
Good night to you, sir.
How are you going? How are you feeling?
How are you doing? How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm very disappointed. Not getting picked for the Saints team.
Mm-hmm.
For the reason why, if you are not going to pick my boy, I don't want to be trained that. Board or the wrestling board should allow them to come the site and all that wasting time. To go up and all that hard work and then you get to the okay and all that. You can't get a play for the wrestling team. It is very unfair. I hope that Desmond Haynes and the board look back at it. And when the season done, it will haunt them. Thank you very much, Mr. Mason.
Thank you. Okay, just before I get a reaction from Tony Gray and from Basil Butcher Jr., let us get this clip on the ear as to the reason given by the lead selector for the non-selection of Darren Bravo.
Yeah, I think that it was a very tough decision for us to make as a panel. Darren has proven not only this year, but last year as well in the Super 50 tournament to be somebody who, you know, performed well at this level. But we have invested in players like, you know, Alex Antonis and Casey Carty. And we just figure that, you know, selecting this team, we also had to take into consideration that the World Cup 2027 is something that we've got in mind. And we believe that we have invested in these players, and we believe that we should give them the opportunity playing against a very strong England side. And that's the reason why Darren has been omitted.
All right, interesting. Your reaction to that comment, Tony Gray, do you agree with the lead selector?
Well, I think, you know, it's sort of contradictory. Because as somebody mentioned earlier, Kieran Ottley, you know, he's played, I think, 2 1-days before. He is going to be 34 in December. All right. So to me, I think that you have to look at performance. It has to be balanced. Let me just mention that I think that the West Indies selectors have done good things and not so good things in selecting this team. As he mentioned, the most honorable Dr. Desmond Haynes mentioned, it is good to see Casey Carty back because he didn't perform well in the tournament. He had low scores consistently, but he has shown us unequivocally that he has the talent to do well in one day international games. I like the fact that Shane Dorich has been brought back because he led a CCC team in an amazing way, and there is a resurfacing of his talent, obviously, with the gloves and with the bat too, because he scored a century and he got 86 run out against Barbados. So he was going on to century. Matthew Ford is somebody I have a lot of time for. I'm not sure why the Bajan selectors have not seen him and his talent, but he's an impactful player. He has that X factor attached to his name. I'm not going to select a Hetmyer. Hetmyer has shown consistently that he has dwindled where his talent is concerned. His concentration levels and his focus has not been good. Even when he's playing 40 regional cricket, he's not scored runs. And we're sending the wrong message to him that we are embracing his potential and not his productivity. So I don't like that message at all. Brandon King has come back. I hope that he's informed. Gudakish Muti, obviously. Hayden Walsh Jr. has to be on my side. What we saw
at whose expense?
Yeah, one of the batsmen have to go because, in my opinion, I think the selectors are getting it wrong with Carrier. They're playing him as a bowling all-rounder rather than a batting all-rounder. He's a batsman first, and we've seen that. I think that he averaged 170 during the course of the tournament. He has the ability to play in any situation, batting at number six. So they're thinking that he's not a batsman first, but he's a batsman first, and then he can bowl some wrist spin. I think that you have to look at the total package that Hayden Walsh Jr. brings to the table. I mean, he got wickets. He's developed his googly. He bowls it at will now. He showed in the final against batsmen who are very adept at playing spin, Puran and Bravo, that he has the ability to mesmerize them. He will bowl a couple of bad deliveries. But his fielding, he's one of the best fieldmen in the world. His batting has improved. And you, again, you have to reward a player. He's just 31 years old. And we know what wrist spinners can do in international cricket. So at somebody's expense, Hayden Walsh Jr. has to be there. Bravo has to be there in place of Hetmyer.
All right, let's take a break. We're going to get some reaction. Of course, we had to find somebody in Australia, given the tremendous performance. And we found a very special guest. And you know him very well. When we come back, we'll certainly introduce him. Mason and Guest, brought in association with our very good friends at ESFE White Rum, the best show of the day.
ESFE White Rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
Of course, we're talking World Cup cricket. We're also talking about the West Indies side that has been selected. The squad, no Darren Bravo, that has certainly brought a great deal of discussion about across the Caribbean. We certainly had a situation where you know, the brother came out and you know, I saw that the post, he's not happy at all. Coming up to 7:30 in the country. And, of course, we want to continue our discussion with Mason and Guest. Hello to you, Dennis. Nice to see you.
Come on, Aussie, come on, come on. Come on, Aussie, come on. Hello, gentlemen. How are you today?
You must be on top of the world.
Well, my second team I barracked for won. So it's a bit of a bonus.
Yeah, yes, indeed.
So my first one got flat tires, and they never made it.
I see. Now, are you surprised by the manner in which Australia won? Were you expecting a closer contest, Dennis?
Well, I actually won a bit of money on it.
Really?
Yes, and if I'd seen the wicket before it, I would have put a lot more on.
Ooh, but I see.
I thought the pressure would get to them. India, and it has quite easy when you're playing these lower games. And one thing about it, they had all their games, they had belters, and when the when their final come, the wicket wasn't really a belter.
No.
Although Travis Head might look like a belter. But it wasn't a belter, and they struggled. And when they had a little bit of a hiccup, pressure told. And, you know, I'm a still great believer on flat wickets. If you've got good pace will win your matches.
Mm.
And that was proven in my day. We went to India and Pakistan on really slow pitches. We still won because we had sheer pace, and that cuts the time down to do what you want to do with the bat, so you get them out. So pace still is a, you know, we use pace, and everybody used spinners, but we kept winning.
Yeah, I mean, Sandy Roberts went to India and did so well. I mean, and it proved that, you know, once you're quick, you know, you can get wickets on any surface.
Well, Marshall Spexler, you know, he just cleaned them up there on flat dogs, you know, so it was amazing. But Australia, you know, with Travis Head played a fantastic knock, and Labuschagne just played that sensible cricket. And I thought we fielded well in that game,
mm-hmm.
put pressure on them, and they had a few hiccups early on the Australia, but they were getting stronger and stronger. And especially the big boost, in my opinion, came when Maxwell scored that 200 on one leg. And I think that gave them so much confidence. They got into the West Indian mode in the 80s. Well, we can't be beaten. And, they came out and performed. Well, Maxwell was just unbelievable, you know, that knock, you know, that was just sensational on one leg. But I must say, the Afghanis, when he was belting him around, they decided to get together, I'd seen on the TV, and do a bowling plan. And they had four plans to him, and the plans were didn't work, but the plan was plan A, plan A, plan A, and plan A.
Mm.
They just bowled the same place every day and just watched it go out of the ground. Unbelievable.
Mm. Ricardo? But
Australia played well. As I said, I thought the pressure might get to India, which they did. And so I had a few drinks with the winnings.
Mm. Any West Indian rum?
Well, I'm still waiting.
Mm. Well, Dr. Ford has promised to send you some. Dr. Ford, you owe Dennis some good old Bajan rum. Well, I mean, they sponsored the show, ESA Field, and let it become the best shot of the day. Dr. Ford, any questions for any member of the panel?
Yeah. Well, one for Dennis. When Australia lost the first two matches, how confident were you then? And, you know, Head wasn't fit. Did you think that it was all over, and some people have written off Australia early on?
Not really, because all due respects, there was a lot of weak sides in that tournament, really. So when you look at the lineup of Australia, they've got a lot of good match winners in that side. So eventually, if you're a fairly good side, you eventually start to come out of the rut. And all they had to do was meet a few I didn't think very strong teams and win. And when they got on a roll, and then Maxwell topped it off. And from that on, I think was, they looked a different team completely.
Mm-hmm.
Basil, the round robin in this format, rather than having two halves of the draw and then picking from those two halves, do you think it helped because every team got to play, each team got to play each other, and it was really in the long run, we saw who the better teams were because everybody played one another. What do you think about this format versus having the two halves that we had previously?
I like this format.
Sorry.
It was the second consecutive World Cup they done it, because it was the same thing in England in 2019. So you really know who is the best team. And a team like, you know, we had those situations where in 2003 in South Africa, where Kenya got into the knockout round by virtue of that round robin and that kind of stuff, matches not played and they getting points and all that kind of thing. So the cream rises to the top in this format as far as I'm concerned. The only thing I would question is one game a day that made for such a prolonged World Cup.
Yes, it was long.
Yeah, you know, there are times you kind of, you're kind of like, this thing's still going on. I think maybe that's a money thing. They want all eyes focused on one game and get the most revenue. But I think it prolonged the World Cup too much. You got to play at least two games a game.
Dennis, you were saying something about the format?
Yeah. Dennis?
They decided to bring another couple of teams in. They have to change it back to some other, like probably the old days. But I thought it was a good format because, as Mr. Butcher said, the best team comes to the top and the best four get to the semi-finals. So you eventually get probably the best team win there. But saying that, I agree with it went too long. So I don't know why they didn't play one day game and then a night game. So they're still covering half a game each. You know, a full game and then the ending of the other game. That could have been done easy, but I don't know. If we get they decide to even put more teams in years to come, they'll have to do something different or definitely play two games in a day, without a doubt.
Ricardo, was it too long to you?
George?
I think it probably was a little bit too long. I myself think that as many things as possible should play in the World Cup. I'm a little bit concerned that this is becoming less and less teams, and the spoils have been only shared between 6 or 8 teams at present. I'd like to see endless teams in the World Cup. I think the World Cup should be about everybody.
Definitely. George, they were saying after the announcement, looking retrospectively, that winning the toss or batting first didn't seem to make a difference. The better teams won in the long run. What do you think? Was there any advantage in winning the toss or batting first, or did we just see the best teams win in the long run?
I don't think there was any advantage winning the toss, batting first or batting second. You have to bat sometime. The teams that had the better strategies always came out on top. Let me go back to the India and Australia opening. I'm sorry, the Indian opening attack. India changed their strategy somehow with the new ball. Siraj usually bowled the new ball, and they didn't. So that's what surprised me. I thought they would have stuck with Siraj, and he was always successful getting wickets in the power play. I know that Shami has a golden arm, but Siraj was doing the damage at the top. But in terms of the toss, it doesn't matter when you bat. Somebody has to bat first, somebody has to bat second. The better teams always came out on top. The guys who stuck with their plan, the guys who worked hard, feel hard, batted well, batted sensibly or bowled sensibly, they were the guys who came out well.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's take a call. There's several calls backed up. Can we take one? Ken, 4417 90. Hello, welcome, Mason and guests.
Yeah, good night to Andrew, to you and the panel.
Yeah, how are you? The poet.
Not bad. Dr. Forrester gave me 10 out of 10. I named the two finalists.
Oh, okay.
So all he says, I get 10 out of 10 for that.
Yeah, well,
that worked.
India thing was they had drew a loss. So, in games, you drew a loss and they didn't lose any of their games. They didn't lose the final one, which was the big one.
Right.
And then the Afghanistan let go the Australian so from
yes Maxwell making a double century.
Don't give up.
Mm.
So that is what I'm again with Darren Bravo. He should be in the team.
Well, you would have picked Darren Bravo.
If they're playing with a strategy that if you perform well, you made the West Indies team and he did it twice.
Right.
And then he had the experience. That team is a young team. And then they bring back Dowridge. Has Dowridge learned to play the short ball yet? So from the time Dowridge see the ball, that game, he don't look at it.
Oh, I see. All right, well, thanks for your contribution. Let's go to Basil. Your reaction to the squad? Happy with it, Basil?
I like everyone else, I thought Bravo should be in the team. I also questioned Matthew Ford because, look at the World Cup. The World Cup was played in India, right? Who were the leading wicket takers? Fast bowlers, not a medium pacer.
Mm.
The next World Cup will be played in South Africa, right? So, I mean, I question that. But in terms of Bravo, I just want to address this Bravo thing.
Sure.
To put some things in context. This age thing. Bravo missed almost 3 years of international cricket. So he may be chronologically 34 years old. But his, in terms of the wear and tear on his body, he's not 34 years old like another 34-year-old who has been playing international cricket.
Mm.
Right? Bravo also, I think West Indies have done this guy a real disservice. When he came back from after the issue he had with the board, they threw him right into the deep end, right? Now, you can't be sitting out of elite sport for that long period of time and then get thrown right back in. He should have been given a chance to play first class, to get his form, and come back into the setup. He has never had that chance. And we have watched Bravo over the last few years, and we keep saying this is not the guy that was there before he was no longer in the team. And I find it interesting. Finally, this year, both in the first class and in the 50-over game, we started to see the signs of the Bravo that was before he got that issue with the West Indies board. And now they tell him he's too old. Now, a man named David Warner, who made over 500 runs in this last World Cup, is 37 years old. The lead selector of the West Indies team, of CWI, played his last test match. He was 39. Viv Richards was 39. Clive Lloyd was 41. We are in a day and age of sports science where you're seeing guys are playing elite-level performances into the late 30s. So West Indies have to stop this stupidness. As soon as a guy passed 30, 31, he's ready to put out a pasture. That has been something in our cricket culture that needs to go. It is absolute nonsense.
Dr. Ford, your reaction, because you didn't pick Darren Bravo. You just heard a fired up Basil Butcher.
I didn't pick Darren. I mean, a guy who takes 3 years off in the national cricket for making a social media outburst to his boss has a responsibility to do what's necessary to keep himself in nick in order to be ready for the game. He mentioned David Warner and some other guys who had a continuous career with achievement. And, you know, a guy who's 34 and 288 days and a World Cup that's 4 years away, I mean, come on, we have to look at the future. And also, if we consider the test returns after he came back, 13.26 in 2019, 8 in 2020. We look at the ODIs, 2019, average of 23, 2020, average of 21, 2022, average of 12.6. I mean, can we really put together two bits of stats where we play tournaments in the same locale without having our usual spread eagle tournament in all of the different conditions and really say that on spin friendly wickets with spinners that we know aren't world class, that these stats really say that Darren is ready for international cricket after the returns that I mentioned before. And it's obvious that if you're going to build to the future and we want to be relevant, I don't want to diminish what Darren has accomplished. I mean, I think every West Indian player who's put on the colors and done something well is someone we should celebrate. But, you know, we must really continue and look to the future. And I think one of the issues why we have the discussion is that the selectors haven't been hard enough articulating their vision. If their vision is to come with the youth and to develop players for the future based on youth, and they categorically say, we wouldn't have these discussions. And I will also put it in context and say that there's no other cricketing nation that is considering and debating a 34-plus-year-old player as being someone they should bring back. This discussion hasn't occurred in Australia or in India or in England or in any of the top cricketing nations. So the question is, why are we having it here with a team that can't even make a World Cup or a white ball tournament for two cycles. So the thing is, I don't want to put a player under the microscope for a discussion that isn't relevant in world cricket right now.
But
Doc, hey, Dr. Ford.
Doc, a guy named Adam Vogts from Australia made his test debut at 35. Right? I mean, this pedestrian argument about future and all of that is about who is performing now.
Yeah, but Adam Vogts had a body of work that was so incredible, and there was a space in the team that Alan could take up. The same argument goes to Mr. Cricket. So when you have guys that have been unfortunate not to be picked and have such a large body of work, and there's a space, then you come in and you fill that space. But when you have a team that's struggling and can't make a World Cup for two cycles, are you going to bring back a guy who has the stats that I mentioned and put him in the same category as Vogts or Hussey? You can't. It's a different situation.
No, I don't agree with you. I don't agree with you there. Those same guys, the so-called young guys, played in the same tournament with Mr. Bravo, and Mr. Bravo outperformed them, but they get picked because they're younger than Mr. Bravo, and this foolishness about future. You pick the team, the players who are performing now. You, as I say, the journey of 1,000 miles starts with one step. Who is to say Bravo would be in the team in 3 years, but Bravo can contribute to the building of that team? It's a new team that you're building. You're going to send a whole bunch of greenbacks to build a team.
Mm.
We went through the same nonsense under Phil Simmons, where we had a whole bunch of young people, and we saw the results, right? We almost
I don't think Phil was a guy who picked the experienced players previously. I don't think you could say that Phil was a guy who picked the youth or really invested in the youth. Phil always articulated that the experienced guy should play, and Phil had crashed and burned with the experienced guys when he was at the helm as coach. And, you know, I don't think that Phil is the example you can bring to say that the youth doesn't work. But still, I have to ask you, what is your goal? And the selectors have to say what they're trying to do. Are we trying to win a series in December? Or are we trying to build a team that can be sustained and successful over a period of time? And we have to decide what we're going to do. We spent 20 plus years trying to mix and match youth with experience, and it hasn't worked. So so the thing is, are you gonna try the same thing and then try to get a different result? And I believe that we have proven that we have to look to another generation of players in order to get a different result.
No, but
well, Doc, Dr. Ford,
I just want to say quickly, Doc, when I talked about Phil Simmons, I was talking to the first iteration of Phil Simmons, not the second iteration. If you remember, one of the reasons why Phil Simmons was relieved was because Phil Simmons said, look, why don't we focus on building our ODI team? Because that is the only team that we have some experienced players, so those young guys can blend and take that experience to the test team. He was resoundingly rebuffed. Now we want to go again with a whole young team and expect a different result. Holders captain as an ODI team, we want nothing with all them young boys. Right? And I don't see what is wrong. Right now, Bravo could bat more than all of them in the team, barring Shehu. Right now.
Well, I guess his 12.6 in 2020 bears your point out, Mr. Butcher. Ooh. I think George wanted to make a point.
Hey, what I was trying to say now is we're looking way ahead to 2027. We should do that. But now I think we should focus in on looking at 2024. We're not even certain about 2024. We can hardly win games. So we should pick our best available sides, try to win some matches, build the confidence of the guys up, and start to work towards 2024 first. Let me take the small steps, because we don't have that full inventory of players to choose from to say, well, we can leave out this, leave out that, and, you know, build a good team. So let us focus on 2024, then 2025, and then start to go to 2027. 2027 is way distance away. It's we're not true, even certain fact, we're going to be qualified for 2024. That's
it's
my point.
True. And I guess one thing I can say is, as the selectors are contradictory when they're going to pick an Otley at 30 yards that we haven't really seen. And I understand that. You're going to say, should we pick a Powell or should we pick a younger opener that hasn't done as well? And I must say that I agree with Tony that Walsh is an incredible leg break bowler. Every team that's successful has one or an orthodox left armer. And you know, Walsh took two wickets more than Correa and had two runs less per wicket. So and he made more runs than Correa. So I'm you know, that one puzzles me, and I can't figure out why Walsh is being marginalized like that. And that's something I spoke about, but I hate to repeat myself and to be repetitive, so I try not to mention it. But, you know, all in all, I would say that most of the players the selectors have chosen are decent selections. And I think sometimes we quibble about
Dr. Ford, would you have picked
Hetmeyer? I know you've interrupted me for a good reason, so I want to listen.
Yeah, would you have picked Hetmeyer?
Hetmeyer's performed very poorly. I think he averaged 20 yards. And I believe fitness is very important to any international team. And I believe that no player that is unfit should be chosen. And I don't believe that Hetmeyer represents what we want for a fit international player. And I don't really consider scores or stats. I feel that fitness is important. And I even heard Ravi Shastri mention it, even during the final. You know, if you have players that have the same ability, the fit player comes out ahead because the fit player can do more in the field. And I think that West Indies and the medical team, and as a medical doctor, I am injured and unhappy by the standards that have been set by the medical panel, and you know, they haven't been consistent, and I don't believe our definition of fitness is consistent with what's necessary for the modern game. And I believe that we must be willing, in spite of whatever the results are, to make it clear that if you're not fit, you can't play.
All right,
Andrew.
Okay, just before we get a reaction from Tony, just hold on, Dennis. I know you want to react, but let's take our final commercial break. Mason and Guest brought to an association with the very good friends at ASA Field White Rum, the best shot of the day.
ASA Field White Rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ASA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want. ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right, we got another, 7 minutes or so left on the program. You wanted to make a point, Dennis Wade? We're not hearing you.
Sorry, hello?
Yeah, we're hearing you now.
Yeah, I would say in this modern day, or even in years gone by, if a player isn't fit, he's not mentally fit either. And if he's not fit, he hasn't got his heart into the game. So, you know, the doctor was right. You must be fit to play this game. And being fit does what the doctor said. In them last, you know, 15 overs, the fit side looks the best, plays the best, catches them balls where unfit people just can't reach. Reflexes batting is just a slightly better. You know, it's not rocket science. You must be fit. They get good money today. If they're not fit, they're just joking. They're a joker, honestly, in my opinion.
Tony,
Well said, Dennis, because it's true about Hetmeyer. I don't understand why the focus is on Hetmeyer. We know that he has potential, but potential is just that, potential. He has not done work on his fitness level. And I, at the level 3 coach, would have looked at him at the 4-day competition and now the 50-over competition and against India. And clearly, his concentration levels and his focus is not good because he's not fit.
Mm.
And he has developed some bad batting habits. So he's failing. And we say, well, all right, he has potential. And because of his age, we're embracing that. We send the wrong message to him. We should be a lot more sterner with Hetmyer in the past. And we should be a lot more sterner with him now. What I'm saying is that we have to understand pertinence too. Our cricket system doesn't allow the player to grow very quickly. We keep on comparing ourselves to India and Australia. They have fantastic cricket systems. So our players mature later. The point somebody was making about Darren Bravo, the chronological age is 34. But because he missed 3 years, he's still at 31, 30. We have to understand the sports science part of it because we have not. And this is the problem that we have, a lack of knowledge in Caribbean cricket. As I said before, we have not looked back at the past too. Dennis talks about fitness. All those guys were tremendously fit. And that's why we were so good as a team. So we have to get back to the past, but we are sending wrong messages time and time again with Hetmyer.
Yeah.
Just on a quick thing, Andrew, I'm a great believer. If you're performing, age is not really a barrier. If you're slightly fit at age, I know it was a test of test matches, but Hubert Clive Lloyd in 40 and 41, when he was 40 and 41, averaged 70 in the test match, his biggest average of his lifetime. So, and I'm a great believer, you can have young people coming through, but if you don't have experience to keep them together when the pressure's on, they'll fall apart, I tell you.
Right. Final word with you, Ricardo. England versus the West Indies. You think England would be very competitive? Of network
sports. Absolutely. I think they'd be terribly competitive, probably in a new cycle. But, that's the way cricket goes. At the end of every 4 years, you should recycle. And I think the West Indies should think about that too.
I see. When are you coming home?
I'll be down in early December.
Okay, wonderful. Our good friend, George, West Indies up against England. What do you think? You think we can beat? Can we beat England, you think?
Of course we can beat England. England is a weakened team right now. They're going to come and try and take their frustration out of us. I would just like our batters to bat 50 overs because any West Indies team that bat 50 overs, they're going to get at least 280 runs. And that's something for our bowlers to work on. If we can bat 50 overs, that'll be great.
Well, I hope that O'Shane Thomas is good enough to bowl more than four overs. Eh? You talk about fitness, and I find that selection interesting. O'Shane Thomas, I don't know. Maybe he's gotten fitter. He's been working the hills of Jamaica. But it's not a T20, Mr. Butcher. It's a 50 over, and he's been selected. 30 seconds. 30 seconds, Basil.
I'm looking forward to the series. England will be coming, as we would say, with blood in their eye because of what happened in this last World Cup. You got some new guys who are looking to make a name.
Right.
So it should be very interesting.
Right. And of course, Dennis, you're celebrating. You're having some good old Bajan rum with that victory as far as Australia is concerned.
I need some.
Okay. We'll send you.
I need some.
We'll send you. Thanks.
And listen, I'd like to have some of them players for 3 months, I tell you.
Yes. I can imagine. You would get them fit. Very fit. Thank you very much indeed.
And I've just booked in three nights at the Gabba because the test match is down in January and I'm going to support the boys.
All right. Thanks very much, Dennis Smith, of course, the former iconic coach of West Indies, being very much a part of our panel. Thanks to you, Ricardo. Thanks to you, Tony. And of course, our very good friend, George. Basil was very much with us as well. And Andrew Ford. And we also got reaction from our very good friend, Derek Murray. I'm Andrew Mason. Here's hoping for a bride tomorrow. It's good night.